conference was called What I Did in My Summer Holidays. This is that sort of paper. It's a collaboration between myself and Tom Natt. Tom Natt is or was an undergraduate at the University of Bath and chief engineer of University Radio Bath, and that's their logo, and it looks as fuzzy as that on my screen at home as well. Their official slogan is the sound of the University of Bath, and it's been going quite a long time, and as far as I can tell from the students, fairly well accepted. This came up because there is a legal requirement in the UK for small radio stations under which this station is licensed. It's licensed so it can only broadcast in a small area at low power, though it does actually stream on the internet as well, somewhere or other. And this requires them to keep, it's a bit unclear, when we started I was told 50 days, I think it's actually slightly less. You have to retain output from your station in order that if somebody complains about it, either under obscenity laws, licensing laws, whatever, that they can demand to have a recording of what you did. Now, that was the sort of starting point. The other thing was a change in what's happening among the student radio stations. Basically, people are beginning to realize there's this thing called technology. And when University Radio Bath started, it really was a man of a microphone, as it were, sitting in a room playing records. And I mean real vinyl records. Now they're much more, they're techy, you know, very techy. Some of them actually produce playlists on their Linux laptops and turn up and play the whole thing from their laptops. I've seen some of our students who've been disc jockeys for them. And among the things they want is they wanted actually to improve the way presenters worked, and there's a sort of air of training of new DJs, new people. And this led to the idea of personal archives. DJing is a sort of, it's a voluntary thing. You do it for the kudos of being a great DJ, or in the case of at least one of them, you go on to great things and do some radio station in London. There's one of them, and they always bring him out in all the documentation. But the idea is that if you do a show, you're allowed to have your little archive. So that's the background, and this is where I came in. I actually found that the regulations, rather after I'd written the first version of this paper, but this is an extract from it. You're required to make a recording of all broadcast output, including advertisements and sustaining services. That's things you buy in. You must retain these things for 42 days after the broadcast and make them readily available. And the threat is the bit at the bottom. Failure to provide logging tapes on request will be treated seriously. It doesn't say what that means, but I like to think of it as being imprisoning the entire student population, but it probably won't happen. That was the background of where we started. And I actually started doing this before realizing what they did. So I asked Tom, what are you doing? After all, this regulation isn't as new as he implied. And this is what they did before. They had a video recorder and a pile of videotapes. And they pushed the videotape in there and recorded onto it. When a tape ran out, somebody in the station had to realize the tape had run out, take it out, and put another one in. There was only one recorder. It's purely a manual system. And, of course, this is the thing which really upset me. They did not even know if anything was going on to the tapes. They'd been putting these tapes in, recording, and putting them in a pile. And nobody had actually ever bothered to find out if there's anything on these tapes. And it relies on somebody remembering to do it. Now, these are students. And for those of you who are academics here will know exactly how good students are at meeting deadlines. So it was a little bit iffy, shall we say. And then there was this other slight thing. If anybody came to them and say, yes, we need to listen to your tapes, they only had one machine, so they're going to have to stop the whole station in order to find out which tape it was. I mean, basically, they hadn't... Or put another way, there was no mechanism. So the idea was the shining new solution. University Radio Bath, it's now a computer-based station. the computers live in a hole in the roof, and the chief engineer has to get it up there by swinging on a rafter. It's really very exciting. And so the question really was, can we use the sort of computer-based technology into logging? So to make this thing, the question I was originally asked, and the immediate answer is, yeah, of course, it's a piece of cake, really, isn't it? But then they told me the nasty bit. The budget for this is zero. Now, that wasn't the original intention, but what actually happened was that there was a company which provides sustaining continuing services for student radios in the UK, of which they got all the radio stations, then got us money back for the advertising. And this company went bankrupt. And suddenly the budget for the station went from being healthy to being negative. And so the idea of this recording is we had to do it for nothing. Well, you know, nothing's a sort of slightly movable feast, but the financial crisis was quite strong. And that remark is, this was a chance thing. Tom just happened to tell me this in passing. I knew him for various reasons. He mentioned this to me, and I thought, this has to be trivial. So my formal title is Professor of Software Engineering, and therefore I sometimes feel I have to pretend to do requirements analysis and stuff. I should say I've never, ever written a specification of a piece of software, and I intend to keep it that way. But actually asking what should happen is quite useful. It had to run reliably for many days, years, with little or no manual intervention. Now, as soon as you say that to a community like this, we've already made one decision. We're not going to run Windows. In fact, it never occurred to me to run Windows, but you know, this requirement for really long, continuous things, the sort of thing that the Linux community claim they can do. Clearly, its job is to log all the audio output from the radio station. That's fairly obvious. I think we ended up with at least 50 days, but we keep sort of changing this number because Tom's a mathematician like me, so we just don't get numbers right. 50 days of material, and we want to be able to recover any section of audio by time. Now, this is different from the previous tape system. The idea is that a DJ could say, I did the 2 o'clock to 3 o'clock slot, I would like a copy of what I did. Or the licensing authority could say, we had a complaint about this particular moment in time, we want to know what you did at that time. The non-technical user is these students. Despite the fact we're a vaguely technical university of a lot of engineers, anything which involves serious computing typing is difficult, especially for the computer science students. And then we have this other requirement. This is, as it were, the really interesting requirement, as close to zero as possible. So that was what we were starting with. And then I start doing calculations. Now, for those people who are good at calculations and have read the paper in the proceedings and realise there's a misprint in the proceedings, I missed out a multiple of 60. The answer's right, but the sum's wrong. I felt it's a bit like the sort of story of Nanny Og, who knew how to spell banana but didn't know when to stop. And I'm in the situation I stopped too soon when I was writing out 60s. This is the true calculation. I'm assuming CD quality, though that was a move. I was willing to drop that down if it became too ridiculous. Stereo, because apparently that's what they do. 16-bit audio, so it's two bytes. 60. There's still something wrong there, isn't there? 60. There's a 24 missing, isn't there? Yes. Makes a change. It's 60. There's a 24 in the paper, but not a 60. So you know, amalgamate. I reckon that's 14 gigabytes a day. And if we keep 50 days, nice round number, that's about 700 gigabytes. Now, I don't know any way of getting hold of 700 gigabytes for nothing. You know, you can, disks are big, but they still, when you get big enough, they cost money. So the next obvious conclusion is we need compression. If you make assumptions about compression rates, and I was very conservative when I did this, I assumed a 1.28 compression, and you do the sums, and you need at least 80 gigabytes. And I did some very elementary experiments on various machines I had lying around, and it looked like about 400 megahertz was necessary. The Linux idea was just without thinking. So that's a sort of background. The obvious software base, C, shell scripts, cron jobs, Perl, all the usual sort of things of this sort of game. So that was the sort of calculation of the background. Now we get to the interesting bits, hardware. Remembering our budget. We found, and I'm not sure exactly where we found it, a 550 megahertz Celeron with 128 megabytes of memory. I mean, it was, when we say found it, it was sort of lying around in a rather strange box. We took an Ethernet card from the pile of old spares lying around in the computer science department, and we found two old sound blasters. I'm not even sure they're not even ISA ones. I haven't actually looked, I can't remember, but they were definitely a bit old. The original idea of two was so we could have one to listen to the radio station, one for DJ training. We installed SUSE 9.1, which is what the university was using then, by essentially putting it in my office, borrowing my keyboard, borrowing my screen, borrowing my mouse, and installing. That went quite well, except, of course, for the usual problems, like it crashed. Then the reason it crashed was there was something wrong with the first version of the motherboard. That was sort of just a minor thing. I didn't even record that bit. And we spent money on a disk. About 100 euros, I suspect, was the number. So that was our hardware base. And then the fun started. This is not going to be one of those terribly high-powered scientific papers. This is actually what really happened. The first problem was the disk which was delivered didn't work. It took us quite a long time to work out why it was every time we installed SUSE, after the motherboard problem, it would run for a short time, then it would stop. Eventually, we convinced ourselves it was the disk by various sort of, you know, moving things around, and I put it into my own machine and proved it didn't. It stopped after a very short while, so we had to return it. Now, that's just reality. The trouble is, it's a real problem. Now, this is the really fun one. The engineer on duty, a student at the radio station, noticed smoke coming out of one of the boxes. And he managed to unplug it and sort of blow at it or whatever you did. But not before the processor and the motherboard had been somewhat damaged. I haven't actually looked at this motherboard, and I don't want to. Luckily, the disk was not damaged. At least we haven't seen any sign of it yet. But this was a bit of a setback, because it took us quite a lot of effort to find the processor in the first place. So we found another one, only this time we're down to 533 megahertz, which is getting a bit closer to my limit of what we thought we could do. But the good news was they found a bit more memory. So we went up to 256 megabytes, and that is sort of probably a good thing, but we haven't had time to really evaluate that, and you'll see why in a minute. That's the real problem. By the time we'd fixed the disk and got it back, rebuilt the system, lost the machine due to a fire, rebuilt the system again, actually wasn't so bad because it was on the disk, the deadline for the academic year was getting very, very close. And I had committed myself that I really had to have this running for when the radio station started in its new glory next year. This is sort of fairly normal, and you think about it, things go wrong, though I think it's the first time I had a real fire. I've had an explosion in a SCSI board once, but a real fire is much more exciting. So the software design, this is, as a requirements level, you need a continuous reading of audio, and periodically we're going to compress it. We're not going to try and do this on the fly. We're a little bit close to the edge of what we've got. We spent quite a little time experimenting, and more than one version of this program existed. And it's not in the paper and it's not on the slides, but believe me, trying to mix certain things like sub-processors with port audio is a disaster. The interrupts all go to the wrong place and all sorts of things go wrong. Eventually, we went back to a threading system, which in some sense might be obvious, but I don't like to say this in very publicly, but it's the first time I've ever written a multi-threaded program. I tend to live in a very simple-minded world, preferably microcode if I can get away with it. So we ended up with a multi-threaded thing, one thread just reading the audio, a thread dealing with filing the audio, another one dealing with compressing it, and various other little bits and pieces which have come and gone over the design. And of course, then there's the other great thing. I decided to use port audio for collecting the audio because I was actually using it already in the CSound project, and I was at that time having very good experience with it. In fact, the problems we've had with port audio have all been in either 64-bit machines or in Macintosh. The state Linux 32-bit has been very robust and very useful. And they actually provided this little program called PA Test Record, which just records audio to a file. So we just stole that. Exactly how frequently we wrote the data back has varied over time, and the slides keep changing according to what it is. File creation, starting compression, changing output are distributed over a cycle. This is that if we do start running into serious performance problems, the idea is we only do it in bits, and we can catch up later. So we end up with this sort of cycle. I'm not good at graphics, as many of you may have discovered by now, so this is an attempt to try and explain what's going on. We have this great big circle. You can see a circle. I don't need to show you a circle. This is a great big circle, and we divide it into sections. At the moment, we're using five sections, and we think of them as minutes. At minute zero, we switch from one file to the next file. So that's when we change logging file. Minute two, one and two are no longer used, but they have been used in previous versions. At minute three, we fire off a compression process to compress the previous thing which we'd stopped writing at on the previous time around the cycle. And that runs asynchronously to once it started going. At 4 minutes, 1 minute before the end of the cycle, we actually create the next file. That was probably unnecessary, but I was a bit worried about how long that was going to take and how close to the edge we were. So at any moment, we've got these... It's just carrying on all the time. And you'll notice that there's no start and no stop. I mean, basically, you start at the top, and I suppose I ought to have had to come in. But the idea is you don't stop. The thing just sits there spinning all the time. This is one of the things I am less happy with. With compression, we had this very interesting conversation about compression. We would say, we need to compress. So I would say, OGG's good compression. Nice, clean software. And he'd say, yeah, MP3 is good, yes. And we used to have this sort of conversation. We ended up with the software is capable of doing both doing either OGG or MP3, but it's a compile time option. The actual figures are slightly different. OGG gives slightly less compression, and it takes slightly longer, though I suspect the audio quality matters. We ended up doing MP3 for I think, two reasons. One is that the students seem to think MP3 and music are the same thing. And OGG wasn't something they understood. That was one problem. I sort of gave in, and part of my giving in was, okay, you lose quality, but have you heard University Radio Bath? I mean, it's not the music I want to listen to anyway. I say I've lost for the present because I'm not giving in on this one. At some stage, I'm going to slip it in when they're not noticing. I have root access to their machines. Other software. Now, this is just the thing I've talked about so far is the base cycle. You need more than that to make this thing work. The other software was a small program is actually written in C, though anybody who is a sensible programmer would realize I should have written it in Perl. Except my Perl is weak, and my C, well, I don't know, I've been writing it for so long now, it's just like writing. It's really a scripting program. It takes the files which we generate, which are generated in rather strange names. You'll see that in a minute. And it moves them into a directory on a daily basis. So we have a directory for every day of recording divided up by time. That was just a little C program. We have a cron job, which is currently set at 60 days, and it deletes the whole directory if the audio in it's more than 60 days old. 60 days appears that the disk runs at about 80% full, so we could actually take that up a bit, but we haven't yet done any of the student training stuff, so I'm not sure how much that's going to take. And Unfinished is a web-based Perl script to retrieve audio. In some sense, I know I should have done this, and it really is trivial, and that's the reason why it hasn't been done. I mean, so, you know, it's sort of like, why write a program you know you can write? It's only interesting to write programs you don't know how to write. But this is the one where essentially you have two little boxes saying start this time, end this time, put the result here, go. And I know it should take me about that long to write it, so it'll be done next Christmas or something. This is actually a snapshot from March, about the time this, the paper was revised. This is not the whole directory. This is part of the directory where the system's running. And the file names have got very exciting names like ARC, which was my idea of archive, and we're up to 41,020 something or 30 files. And we're generating a new file every 5 minutes. If you read from the bottom up, this is a time ordered directory because I tend to think that way. At the bottom, you can begin to see some of the things going on. There's a file called 41032, which is a big file, and for those who are good at doing arithmetic, you'll realise that's 5 minutes of raw samples. And that's a file which we have finished writing to, but we haven't started the compression on yet. There's a 41031 MP3, which is just, that's the last of the MP3s which have been completed. At the bottom, there's a 41032 MP3, which is not yet finished. You know, the size is different. That's essentially, there's a compression process going on. And this really wasn't me a case of just logging and seeing what's happening. And obviously, a very high chance I'd catch it in this state. O34 is an empty file. That's waiting to be used on the next cycle. And 033 is the one I'm currently writing to. It's not quite finished. So the log file is that in case something goes wrong with the compression, we make a log file and we mail it to ourselves if anything goes wrong. That was probably overkill. It hasn't happened yet. So you never know. It might happen one day. And we just have, every time I look at it, I just lots and lots of these. It's really exciting. The experience. This did actually get live before the students came back in October. I think we were a day or two ahead. I mean, it was a bit tighter than I like. Mind you, it was quicker than the last time I had a deadline when we managed to get the software running at 4 o'clock on Sunday and the first class was on Monday morning. And that was for the whole university, so that's a long time ago. It's been running since October, except for the one occasion when the power cut out. And that rather killed it, but it also killed the radio station, so it didn't matter if we weren't logging it. Then there's the interesting things I got really and utterly wrong. I completely forgot about summertime and wintertime. And these files are just dated by according to the clock. Obviously, you want the local time, because that's what the students, you know... They did 2 o'clock to 3 o'clock, not 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock universal time. It's, you know, they've got a watch. And I completely forgot about this. And when the clock changed, we suddenly realised it was going back. The first time was back, which meant we're just going to happily write over all these files for a whole hour. Yes. We worried about that a little too late to do anything about it. With no crash is not strictly true. We've had one crash due to the power falling out, and you'll be delighted to know that yesterday when I was reading my email, I had a message from Tom Natt saying, we have a problem. And I haven't worked out what it is. I think it's not the logging program which has crashed. I think it's the Syslog program which has crashed, which we use to find out what's going on. And the other thing was we were saved, absolutely saved by another bug I hadn't thought of from summertime. I had made this totally naive assumption that if I'm receiving audio at 44.1 kilohertz, then in a second I got 44,100 samples, and in a minute I've got 60 times that, and blah, blah, blah. Of course, we all know that the oscillator on sound cards doesn't really work that well, and on a sound blaster it really doesn't run that well. We are currently drifting by 19 seconds a day. So we started off this thing nicely synchronous, and every day is, I forgot which way it goes, but the good side of that is that when we took the clock back, the drift, by chance, it really had happened, even the quantization, the drift had happened. So we had two versions of these files, all a few seconds apart, and it was very easy to decode by hand. Of course, the problem is that where are we now? We just come into summertime. That's easy. It just means there's an hour without any dates. But by next October, I've got to get this one fixed in a better way. We have fixes, but they're not yet live. This is the problem we've had most trouble with. We are actually using the syslog system to tell us what files we've recorded, what the names are, when they started. And we're using that to get the times. And this works beautifully, except once every very long time, it's happened I think twice so far, the syslog file gets closed down, compressed and recycled. And at that point, something very strange happens to the audio and it fails to find the syslog, and we just don't catch up. There's a synchronization problem. We don't lose any data, so we're satisfying the legal requirement. We don't lose the data, we just haven't got the thing properly organized. We're going to have to do with that one someday. This is another snapshot of an archived directory. This is from the 4th of March, and you'll see that the files have really exciting titles. 22:45:08.mp3 is the file of audio which starts at 45 minutes past 10 o'clock at night, with 8 seconds because it's drifted. Originally, I forgot to put .mp3 on the end, and this really upset so much software that we had to put it in there. The file at the bottom, the index file, is I did actually create something in case it was useful. I think I've come to the conclusion it's absolutely useless, but it's there. So we've got one of these directories for every day, and we have 60 of these things lying around. It was a great day when the first time we went through 60 days and things started getting deleted. It really felt good to see this data go. So the conclusions. Well, I think we've done what we tried to do, not necessarily perfectly. It does everything we asked for, but it's got these few little places we need to twist. And there's another one, actually, which I'll talk about in a few minutes. It's robust in the sense the logging is robust. It's what I do with the data after we've logged it. And the budget of £60 is pretty close to zero. But not zero. It's got rough edges. Things don't quite work. This is the obvious remark. The Linux tool chain, the libraries, made this much simpler than I thought it was going to be. You know, my first thought was, it's like all software. You know, somebody says, can you do this? Yeah, I can do anything. It's got to do, one minute, that means I've got to write some code. I've got to think. I've got to get this thing to work. It turned out to be much easier. I sort of thought to myself, suppose I had done this in Windows. I would still be struggling with so many problems. So in some sense, that's good news for the Linux community. It really did make easy. All those things you say, I mean, as a community, that Linux makes life easy, are actually true. It really does work when you try this sort of software. It's really easy. We've got things we haven't done, as people have pointed out. We don't make backups, and we haven't got physical distribution of that backup. We've looked at that, and the real question is we can't find £60 to put a disk somewhere to make a copy of it. And I've looked around our department and I can't find that amount of disk space which is not full up with something else. Now I want to come back to say one other thing. I didn't write this on the slides because it's very hard to sort of think of a way of describing it. We have had another problem, and this is a user interface problem, and I don't normally care much about the user interface, but users we're talking about seem to have real trouble with files. So I can go back and find them. Come on. Come back. They have trouble with archive files like this. They say things like, but I didn't start at 7 seconds past the hour. I started on the hour. Well, you know, they didn't really, but they think they did. And these times, you notice there's a drift there between 8 seconds and 7 seconds. The drift's actually happening. The fact that the things that are not aligned on 5-minute boundaries appears to cause them unbelievable problems. I don't quite see why. I'm sure it's just a scale, it's a number. I count from zero, by the way, against the other people the other day. But that's... And we're currently looking on how to, as it were, change it so it aligns on the minute boundaries. I did actually look at trying to do it inside the main logging program, and that is absolute pain. I mean, it's doable. Well, it's a Turing machine. You can do anything. But it's actually pain. At the moment, I'm contemplating two solutions. One is just to split the raw audio at approximations to five-minute boundaries. They'll never notice the difference. And the other is to split the MP3s at the same place. And I don't know which I'm going to use. The other things I have not written down here among my conclusions are that I'm getting feedback, slightly indirectly, from Tom, from his DJ people, that they find this a really useful thing. They're really pleased with it, even though currently the interface is not properly finished and they have to ask Tom for it and Tom gives them as a file. They're very happy with it, and they actually say the quality of the audio is really good. This surprises me, because as far as I know, the quality of what goes in isn't particularly good, so what comes out the other end? I should also make it also one thing quite clear. I have never listened to University Radio Bath. I thought at one stage it would be useful to listen to some of these MP3 files to make sure they worked, but at that stage somebody had taken my speakers off my machine and put them in the studio. So in fact my machine is now silent, and it really wasn't worth finding a machine with speakers just to listen to an MP3 of something or other which I probably wouldn't even recognise. So it's second-hand, this idea that the audio is okay. And these are some final thoughts. It started off as sort of, you know, what I did in my summer holidays. Actually, this is not that. This is what I did instead of having summer holidays. And despite the problems, I mean, it's a resounding success in the sense it satisfied the users. They don't know what the problems are. They're really happy. And I did want to the second paragraph, I feel I have to do this. The basic design was dreamt up before and during warm-up for Tai Chi sessions. Tom Natt was chairman of the Tai Chi Club last year and treasurer this year. And I really want to thank Simon Lee, our instructor, who, though he was not pleased, he didn't actually throw us out. Though occasionally he did ask us to stop talking now, please. Our behaviour was actually totally improper, but the project was so exciting. And I had to put a Tai Chi sign there just to sort of show this. I believe this is a real Taoist operation. I'm sure there are other things I could have said about it, but with people streaming and things, you know, you be careful what you say. But I think I'll stop. I probably got overrun slightly. Sorry, I didn't notice.
Thank you very much, John. Are there any urgent questions, or maybe we can allow one question, but we are a little bit late?
Okay. My name is Jochen Knut from Germany. I was in the same situation 5 years ago on a local radio station, non-commercial, and I made systems similar to this. I was my question is, why do you, did you rule out live compression directly to MP3? Or
we didn't try it, to be honest. I thought about it. My experience with the compression software is it seemed to be fairly hungry, certainly on the machines we could afford. And so by bunching it up, I was hoping that if it took too much time, as long as we completed well enough, it would catch up. So essentially, I thought of doing it and decided not to because I just wanted to do, but essentially allow for flexibility. In many ways, that's why I say this is what I did in my summer holiday. There's very little experiment. There are other things we could have done which I didn't do, and I haven't had time to try them. This is much more like we needed to get it working, and we got it working. And I'm sure other people have done similar things, but I did it, so it's mine.
Okay, so any questions from the internet audience? Yeah.
Carl Hayes, who's been one of the Icecast developers, has been helping us with the streams, and he just wanted to mention that his branch of the Icecast, or the ICE's source client for Icecast, has a file save option, and we're actually using that to archive the streams of the talks. And I just also wanted to mention that I know we're running out of time, but I want to talk to you later because I work for Radio Free Asia, and we have a big system for this, and we need to replace it.
You do it properly.
Not quite, close. Well, not even close.
I'm very happy to talk to anybody, and as I've said to somebody, if anybody is fool enough to want the software, they can have it.
All right. Thanks again very much, John. And now we have a short break, 5 minutes, to set up the next talk. Thanks.
Hello, hello. Yeah.